Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver Night 2 review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamlet and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on Night 2 of NXT TakeOver. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown. We used to review the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT. We'll just review both shows, and I haven't adapted the intro to this yet, so we'll just carry on with that. Pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamfler and Sidgwick to review Night 2 of NXT TakeOver. And how did it compare to Night 1, Michael Hamfler?
Not very bloody well. Podcasts are an audio medium, so people couldn't see on our Zoom calls me holding my hands up, admitting how wrong I was to be cynical in the preview of Night 1 in saying how great it was. So they also won't be able to see my hands being able to stay flat on this very table when I say I was bang right about being cynical about Night 2. This was as bad a show, and it was a whole show, like there's lots to pick on in the main event. This was as bad a show as Night 1 was good. And what a disappointing feeling that was. It wasn't without some good stuff. I'm not just going to like bury the things I genuinely liked in our match-by-match review of this, but I left this show with such a bitter taste in my mouth that it made me reflect worse on even the things I did like, which in truth is far more in keeping with my experience of NXT in 2021. This takeover was far more reflective of what I believe to be the problems rooted in this version of the product currently.
This was a quintessential NXT takeover for me, and that is nay a good thing. My goodness. I was watching NXT TakeOver Night 1. Loved it. Absolutely loved that show. I thought it was great. I liked how everything was just more economical than normal. And it's all because they had to wrap it in 2 hours because it was broadcast on the USA Network. Without the parameters of the TV show, without the editorial control, they wanked themselves daft and spaffed their perceived own genius all over themselves, as a lot of these takeovers tend to do in the modern era. It was a parody of a show headlined by a just cliche of a pro wrestling match.
Yeah, I wouldn't be as harsh as Hamlet was in terms of how bad it was. It was clearly not as good as Night 1. I think self-indulgent is the best way I would describe that main event. I enjoyed the show. Like you say, it's not up there by any stretch of the imagination with the takeovers that have preceded it. Like you say, more of a modern, current era takeover than the sort of classics we've become used to. But yeah, flashes of moments in this and yeah. The main event, we'll get into it. Let's start at the beginning of the show, and probably the highlight for Michael Hamlet of this show, Poppy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the ladder match. I was about to like tear a strip off you. Yeah, Poppy was great. That stand and deliver cover was really, really good. Set the show too high for the fall that was to come, unfortunately. Made me just think that I wish they booked her for Night 1 and used her with Io's entrance again. Yeah, because then you would have been able to just polish everything you might still like about this in Wednesday and not have to think about Thursday. I just want to say, first message I sent to Sidgwick over the virtual desk this morning was that the Bad Dynamite on Wednesday was better than this show. Honestly, if I had to sit through one again, it would be that. I'd rather watch another 10 minutes of Matt Jackson's acting than the last 10 minutes of Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly.
I'm a Poppy guy now.
She's great, man.
I was never really a Poppy guy. Just didn't get it. Not for me. That's fine. And spellbound by how unusual and like great.
It's good weird, isn't it?
Great weird. There's lots of terrible weird. Very, very exceptional weird is Poppy. That's the highlight of the show. Why would I watch the show, Paul Levesque? Why would I watch the show?
This is it. This is officially the lad's trip to go and see Poppy when we can actually go to gigs in the UK. Right, let's start with the ladder match to crown the undisputed cruiserweight champion. Before we get into what happened, Sidge, I talked about this before we with you before we started recording. Surreal dynamics to this match. We sort of knew going in, but I had no bloody idea who I was meant to cheer, who the crowd were cheering, like disregarding, and I don't want to, you know, dismiss it, but disregarding the issues outside of the wrestling ring, like there were still no baby faces in this match, and yet Santos Escobar certainly got more of a baby face reaction despite the fact two of his goons got involved.
I mean, just typical NXT. You wrap a load of tweener intense, like soulless fake intensity in this all tweener dynamic that's just so cold. There's no warmth or joy or like happiness that you're meant to get from pro wrestling out of this. And they, as you've mentioned, healed and baby-faced Santos Escobar over the course of the exact same match. And like the most extremes of the two opposites as well. Like the most like possible babyface reaction when he celebrated his win with the most like timeless heel tactic to secure that victory, except he didn't secure that victory in a really glaring flaw that took me out of a match that I obviously wasn't emotionally invested in for reasons that we've labored upon quite heavily. I thought the match was really well constructed, like really well constructed. And yet that glaring idea of having Legado del Fantasma interfere for no reason, didn't inform the finish. Either they should have been there or they shouldn't. And then instead, because NXT is brainworms, they were there for a bit just to do a thing. It made Escobar look like an idiot. So I guess he's a heel because that's what heels are. And yet, he's a really nice bloke with a massively warm smile on his face as his child celebrates his like career triumph.
It was odd.
And yet, stripped away of that ridiculous plot hole, I thought this match was, by modern ladder match standards, like really well constructed. Everything that was positioned was kind of done so in that fabulous, crucial, plain sight sort of way. So when bumps were taken on the ladders, it was like, oh, great. It just felt like this organic, really, really, really well done ladder match. That was just too NXT for me to truly like. And it involved Jordan Devlin as well.
It was so weird, wasn't it, Hamflet, when they came out, they interfere, and you go, okay, well, he's been mainly getting babyface reactions, but they've just literally stopped Jordan Devlin. He was going to have his hands on the titles, basically. And then, not only that, but then he sends him to the back and then gets bloody Spanish flied off the ladder.
Yeah, I thought that they put Escobar in a kind of unenviable position there because he had to do, the way he shooed them off, he had to do it with like arrogant facials as if to sort of say, no, it's thanks to that, but I've got it, boys. It's all right, rather than making him look gutsy. But then if you're asking that difficult question in the first place, why? You know, at that point when they thought about that spot and they're like, well, we're going to have to make him look a bit cocky facially, otherwise, isn't this going to seem like a babyface move? Then don't do the thing. As Cedric points out, like either use them the whole way through and then have Devlin chase them off or have, you know, referees take them to the back, whatever. But just like, or don't deploy them at all. I actually think the crowd liked Escobar more, but the bulk of the match felt constructed to try and make you like Devlin more. And I think probably to service that running spot, which again is insane. Not least because outside of what we know, Devlin's quite good as a heel. Devlin's probably the better of the two as a heel. Certainly in terms of the moves that you can use in this match. I didn't like the match as much as Cedric. I like the bumps were felt organic. The big spots felt organic, which is a huge problem in modern ladder matches. But another huge problem in ladder matches is that the wrestlers don't go for the belts enough. And that was like evident for me here. I cannot bear ladder matches Like, I worry that all the like old fashioned wrestling takes are going to be just attributed to Jim Cornette, because I feel like we've had a couple of these lately. Like, he can be right from time to time, because sometimes the old takes still make sense. The first and only thing you should be thinking about doing is racing up that ladder and grabbing the belt. Everything else should be as a result of the race gone wrong. And I hate seeing that get forgotten. It's not just isolated to this match. I'm not just picking on these two. But for the fact that we know for a fact Shawn Michaels is sat on a headset watching this, he knows. And he should be the one to be able to keep that sort of stuff tight. It's just...
Is he having a wank?
Just really, like, really, it really pisses me off watching ladder matches where the sole focus isn't climbing the ladder to get the thing. Of course it's about building the spots. I'm not stupid, but I don't want to be tracked like I'm stupid when I'm watching the match either.
Just remembered when completely randomly it's just tickled. just remembered when Coolio was on one of the breakfast shows and they had someone on from Big Brother. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. Everyone's having their breakfast and this Scottish bloke goes, oh, it's a bag of wank, right? And they go, oh, God, I'm so sorry about that. So sorry. I'm so sorry. We do apologise. And then Coolio goes, did he just say a bag of wank like that? no, shut up. No, everyone stop saying it. Anyway, let's go through the match itself. Devlin early on felt this. He did an assigned moonsault to the outside. Nailed it on Escobar and then just smashed his head into the announce desk. That looked rough. And then, yeah, I don't want to belittle any of this, but I'm going to miss out all of the times they twatted each other with ladders, because it happens a lot. It's a ladder match. And you know what happens with that sort of thing. There was a bit where Devlin is reaching up to grab the titles. Escobar goes to pull him down and Devlin hits him with a pretty rough looking DDT in the midst of all that. Great spot with Devlin on top of the ladder, hitting a moonsault on Escobar. Picture perfect moonsault, I have to say. And then later on in the match, yeah, Devlin is again very close to grabbing those belts when Legado del Fantasma run out, push over the ladder. Devlin not only falls off the ladder, he spills to the outside. They hoy him into the steel steps, and that's when Escobar goes, thanks, but I didn't need that. It wasn't like he was just about to grab the titles. Devlin stops Escobar from getting to the belts by hoying a ladder at him, propping up another ladder next to him, and then they hit a Spanish fly off the ladder to the mat. Devlin almost grabs the titles, but then Escobar climbs up, headbutts him. Devlin falls and crashes through a suspiciously wooden ladder that was propped up in the corner. That allows Escobar to grab both belts. He is the undisputed cruiserweight champion. And yeah, he had a kid. No one told me he had a kid. He celebrated with his kid and Legado del Fantasma. I've no idea where they go after this, Sige.
Neither do they. They were getting chinned by Karrion Kross like a month ago. Who cares?
Yeah.
I understand why they did that particular spot that was the glaring flaw in the match, because they want Jordan Devlin to go back to NXT UK and retain some of whatever passes for star power in that rubbish, just dire, depressing, dank hole of a brand that they have over there. But there's far better ways to do that. Have him lose a very good match that you've thought about. Don't just do some bollocks. I'm done.
I'm waiting for Hamlet.
I have nothing to add. I felt nothing for this. Like, men shouldn't go and hurt each other as much as these two did and leave you feeling nothing. On our preview, I talked about how they kind of inadvertently tied this too close to the past by having like quite a cute reference to Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon. You already put that in people's minds by the way that Shawn slid the ladder in and the two belts. This got nowhere near that. This wasn't artful. This didn't make elegant use of the stipulation. It was just a lot of this was a proper stuff happening match. It's really like... really in no mood for the remainder of the show after a ladder opener between, and like the commentary was terrible as well. Let's have a minute for that. Like Vic Joseph and Beth Phoenix not knowing where the gears are on their like sort of escalation and going so hard and heavy on the danger and, oh my God, how could one man do this to another man? So much so in the opener that you've got absolutely nothing left when you need to wind yourself up and do it again in the main event.
Oh my God, the main event commentary was hideous.
Oh, that was
hideous.
really bad. Like, some of it's on them. We know that WWE commentary is very heavily produced, so you can put some of the responsibility on the people in the headsets. Minging, absolutely minging. Come back more, all is forgiven. Maybe puns are better than screaming. I don't know. I just so much of this opener did not work for me.
Yeah. 1/3 of the commentary wasn't bad. Just say that. I really enjoyed the brief interview we had backstage with MSK next. They're just likable. They're just so bloody likable, aren't they? They talked about winning their tag titles, how happy they are. Apparently on the kickoff show, I didn't watch it, obviously, Killian Dane and Drake Maverick, I think Breezango, they're the number one contenders, and MSK were happy to face them. And then they did a funny little bit where they both picked the opposites in the NXT Championship match, and Balor and O'Reilly. They're just likable blokes, aren't they?
Isn't everyone happy?
Everything else on this frigging card was shade, so it was nice to get some light.
Then we got the NXT Women's Tag Team Titles, Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon versus The Way. They had The Way jump Blackheart and Ember Moon at the beginning. That allowed them to isolate Shotzi Blackheart and target her with a lot of double team stuff and just the numbers advantage for the first sort of 5 minutes of this match. Eventually, she finally gets over to give Ember Moon the hot tag, who comes in and just lays waste to everyone for a bit. She sets up for the Eclipse. Indi Hartwell, though, distracts her. That allows LeRae to push her down. They go to hit a double team superplex. Shotzi Blackheart gets involved. Big Tower of Doom spot that got Indi Hartwell a two count on Ember Moon. Oh God, Shotzi Blackheart, it's one a match, isn't there? This was a tiger suplex that sent Candice LeRae out to the floor, and Shotzi Blackheart went for a suicide dive. I don't know whether it was, I had flashbacks to the classic Lita suicide dive where she scorpions herself, but then I also feel like she wasn't caught quite well at all. It just went flying into the barricade. That was pretty terrifying. In the end, though, Ember Moon hit a double eclipse on both members of The Way. A diving senton from Shotzi Blackheart. 1, 2, 3. A retention for Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon, Michael Sidgwick.
Yeah. Look, this wasn't takeover worthy, ultimately. I probably would have been pretty impressed with this on the TV show. And that's kind of where it belonged for me. I think I've seen a lot, far too much, in fact, of this particular dynamic. Didn't help at all. I don't feel like the titles are particularly prestigious. I feel like I've seen this sort of match 1 million times. Didn't have any personality to it whatsoever. They worked really hard. That is a euphemism for... they did, in fact, work very hard, but I was incredibly bored and unmoved throughout. Just a spot fest, except not a particularly great one that allows you to excuse the fact that they're just doing stuff to do stuff here, and it's great. Like a pretty workmanlike spot fest, and that's an oxymoron.
I quite enjoyed the first 7 or 8 minutes of this for the most spurious of reasons. I just sometimes I get so emotionally detached from some matches that I find something else to watch instead. Happens a lot on NXT. And I had no emotional investment in the belts or the feud or the rivalry or any of this. So I just quite enjoyed watching Candice LeRae be a bit of a general. I thought obviously the glue of the first, not even the first half, I would say most of this match. And it's just nice to watch that sometimes, but you're not watching it invested in the story then, are you? You're above it all, kind of just analyzing it, I guess, and just appreciating the work of somebody. I thought she was brilliant throughout. All of it that was good early on was because of her, and because of a bit like watching Cody work in the Shaq match, and you shouldn't really be saying that about one that features four wrestlers. But then I felt that the dive followed by that, by her not shot. I don't know if Shotzi was not fully recovered from that, but not really able to elevate herself that much for that 3D flapjack thing the way it did. Felt like those two things back to back took me out of it quite a bit at the end. So the finish was fine, with the eclipse into the senton thing, that sort of felt like, oh, they're worthy of winning this match, they're worthy of holding belts, all that kind of crack. But yeah, I didn't get any proper earnest enjoyment out of it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
What came next was, yeah, probably match of the night, in my opinion. Johnny Gargano, Bronson Reed, the NXT North American Championship. Sorry, you rolling your eyes there, Hamlet.
I love it when that happens.
Yeah, no, that's not at you. That's just when I stopped and thought about what the match of the night was, I realised, like, all jokes aside, it was probably the match between Poppy and the song Stand and Deliver. It wasn't a match of the night. This was so boring.
Like, I quite enjoyed this one, I have to say.
Second Gargano takeover match in a row with a neglected and injury cell. Like, oh, you're working a rib, are you? Well, just sell it for 5 seconds. all the enthusiasm I had for Bronson Reed was drained out of me over nearly 20 frigging minutes. What do they expect?
The story of the match was, a slight mismatch for Johnny Gargano and Bronson Reed, and therefore Johnny Gargano having to cut a few corners. He was surprised early on by the athleticism shown by Bronson Reed. He hit a fallaway slam in the midst of all this. I like the bit where Gargano went for a slingshot spear and Bronson Reed just didn't move, basically, at one point. Gargano sends Reed out to the floor, goes to hit him with a dive, but Reed catches him. Gargano escapes that and hoys him into the corner of the announce desk. That's where they did the injury to the ribs of Bronson Reed. So Gargano obviously targets that. A nice bit where Reed goes for a vertical suplex. Gargano tries to knee his way out of it, and Reed just goes, I'll just hit it with a Death Valley driver then instead. Reed puts Gargano up for the electric chair. Gargano reverse hurricanranas him, applies the Gargano escape. Finally, Bronson Reed reaches the ropes. Gargano attempts one final beat, but Reed catches him, hoys him back into the ring, goes for the Wade Barrett's favorite move, tsunami. Awful bit of commentary this, where Beth Phoenix was like, tsunami, no, or some bollocks. I was like, tsunami, not quite, or some
tsunami, more like tsunami.
So Gargano rolls out of the way of the tsunami. He hits the DIY kick, but there's only one of them, of course. Reed goes up. Theory distracts him. That allows Gargano a chance to stop everything. Reed hits a powerbomb, but when he goes for the cover, of course, Austin Theory puts Gargano's foot on the ropes. That allows Reed to go out to the outside and get in Austin Theory's face. He catches a Gargano dive, hoys him into Theory. Then Theory just eats it, taking a bullet effectively for Johnny Gargano. Reed counters one final beat again in the ring for a slam kick, goes for a top rope moonsault, no war in the pool. Gargano hits two final beats, I suppose. 1, 2, 3. Gargano retains the NXT North American Championship. Michael Hamlet.
That catch on Gargano when Theory was on the floor was the best bit of the match by a mile, because it was the only point where they made proper use of, like, it wasn't the biggest size disparity ever, but they should have actually made far more use of the size disparity. And they did it like once, and that was Bronson Reed is massive. And he can catch. It was almost like a no-look catch, wasn't it? Like, I'm so huge that I'm just going to stand there and absorb this because I'm busy dealing with your idiot mate. I thought this was a huge disappointment. Like, a major, major letdown. Second takeover in a row where a Gargano match has gone too long with, like, virtually nothing happening. At least when he would get, like, 20, 30 minutes, it was because, like, stuff would go on. I don't feel like much went on to even justify the runtime. I thought the chemistry was off. Like, if there was a few, like, difficult and damaging miscommunications. Like, one glaring botch, but a few other miscommunications. It just didn't work for me. And after all the praise, that, like, I was bursting to heap on them for the Gauntlet Eliminator because of all the successes in that match, and there were loads, there were absolutely loads. One of them was that everybody in that match had been 50-50'd to death, and yet they managed to get out of it with somebody that you felt like that was going to win a belt. And what's happened over 48 hours is that Bronson Reed has literally been 50-50'd. He's won, and then he's lost. So I think it was a huge error in not putting the title on him as well. They're going to ask us at some point or another to invest in Bronson Reed again. Why? Like, why should we? I thought this was a multifarious failure, this, for me.
Crap, Hogan, because when you make the babyface do something like epic or like arduous, the babyface should win after that. WWE NXT do this all the time. Rubbish. You know when you get bored and something pops into your head? I don't know why I'm talking about this, but I feel like I have to talk about it because I'm going to get a pop out of you. When I was reliving that rubbish match, not rubbish match, gentleman's three match, if that, through your rundown, I was reminded of the time that I was in the old days, sat in the office, just writing a list. I looked up, Hamlet used to sit opposite me. I went, Hamlet, do you know you're glowing bright red? It's like, what? It's like, do you know that you are bright red? I'm not just saying you've got like ruddy cheeks, or like you look hot, or you've got a few, you are a different color, you are red.
What happened?
Food poisoning.
It's not for a piss of myself.
Insane food poisoning. Like, I went lobster red. Like, I'm more like a lobster than the fiend on Raw the other week. It was bananas, man. Like, I don't know what's made Cedric think of this or how he's going to tie it to this piece of shit of a match.
But, I'm not going to.
Well, I mean, maybe you could compare it to what I left behind in the old office toilets, because Jesus Christ, I was a wreck and I had gone bright red.
What caused it? Do you know?
Bacon sandwich.
Bacon sandwich, man. From Greg's, of all places. You'd think I'd have steeled myself. I used to have about three a day.
Don't know why, but just...
Oh, man.
Oh, my God, this goddamn man.
I was so impressed with how stupid I looked. And, like, don't anybody ask for this on Twitter, because it's not happening. But, like, I looked such a goddamn state that while I was, like, sweating half to death in the box, I took a selfie and sent it to my wife. I was like, look at the state of me. I think I'm coming home.
Don't think you did.
Didn't even go home. Just got back to work. Sweating off. I had pool with Sidgwick at 11:30.
Did I?
Like, don't for the same day.
Pretty ready, O'Sullivan. oh, God, this match.
I'm not going back while the schools are closed.
I think what I'm doing is I'm procrastinating. Talk about this match. Johnny Gargano was a complete cliche. It's becoming, for a long time, it's been quite funny. I'm a big fan of Shameful Joy. Schadenfreude, I'm all about it. He's become a cliche, and this match was full of Johnny Gargano cliches. Oh my God, big man can do a cartwheel. It's like,
for reals.
And the thing is, it's like Johnny Gargano is doomed, because he's doomed to do the thing that he knows he's really good at, which is the epic melodramatic match. He's doomed because that is mandated by the formulas and the playbook of NXT. He's also doomed because if he goes on the main roster, he's doomed. It just, he's more doomed than your next favorite great wrestler in the ring. Johnny Gargano is going to further descend into parody because he's already doing it in the match when he stumbled upon a few months ago. Like, it's a genuinely really funny comedic persona. Like, just do that in the ring. It's got to be better than this. It's got to give you more buzz. It's got to benefit your legacy more to be a proper comedy man in the ring. Like, just something different. He needs to be something different because what he's doing is the same thing, except intensified and intensified and intensified to the point where it's just a total joke. So he's doing the shock faces. He was doing the spots. He just shouldn't be doing. People know me. I've got an incredible amount of latitude for an absolute spot fest, right? Love it. I love being exhilarated. This just didn't exhilarate me because I was just too busy. Like, there's a finite point, unless you're doing it with utterly no abandon whatsoever for the absolute thrill of it or the total pops. This had the nerve to kind of take itself seriously. So when he gave Bronson Reed, of all people, a poison rana, I'm like, no. Like, you can't do that. Marco Stunt can do that because he gets launched into doing that. There's a tiny little bit of effort made to preserve suspension of disbelief. Got none of that in this cliche of a match. And it wasn't even the most cliched match on the show.
Next up, we got the NXT Championship match, Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross. I don't know who this is more offensive to, but I was thinking about this as you were talking then. And this is maybe a real backhanded compliment to Daniel Bryan, but it's like, Mom, can we have Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns? No, we've got Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns at home, and it's this. It's Finn Balor versus Karrion Kross, basically. The chalk ice version of Daniel Bryan.
Sorry, I used to ask sometimes my dad if we could get a drink when we were out, and he'd say, no, there's water in the taps. That's just made me think Kross and Balor's water in the taps.
You know what? In a similar vein, I'd always ask my mom when I was younger, what's for tea? She'd go, with sugar on. I go, you know, I should make some rubbish that I'd made her make me. But sorry, Wilborn, give us the rundown of the match.
It's fine. I like this. This.
I was like, Stephanie is just dropping the word on us. She's like NXT AEW Dynamite, my mum.
You can tell where this is.
Like the views. Bring your mum.
Oh, yeah, you can tell this is the end of a long WrestleMania week.
It's the beginning?
Beginning of the week.
I know, yeah. I should say a week leading to WrestleMania where things are even going to be madder next week. God. Can you take us to Center Parks as well, Sitch?
Nope, 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 nope. I've already got two children, Wilborn. I do not need a third.
Yeah, don't worry. We won't be at Center Parks, but we'll be in the DMs.
Sitch, is this the best cycle ride ever? So yeah, what are we talking about? Oh yeah, the NXT champion.
You're one of them saunas. Humphrey, you're going red again.
Yeah, as I sort of alluded to, the story of this match was Karrion Kross is a hard bastard. If you try and go toe-to-toe with him, he's going to murder you. So Balor tried to sort of sneak his way around Karrion Kross. He forced Kross into the ring post, of course he did, and then targeted that shoulder and arm for the majority of his attack. I did like the bit where Kross is trying to power out of an armbar and Balor just arm trap flatline at him. Oh yeah, that'll do some damage on the surgically repaired shoulder. There we go. The callback to the Kyle O'Reilly match from Finn Balor he targeted the liver, I believe, for a while on Karrion Kross whilst he was in the corner. Kross fires back up, goes for his finisher, or at least calls for it. Balor, shotgun drop kicks, coup de grace off the top rope. Kross kicks out and then immediately snatches Finn Balor into a rear naked choke. Balor rolls out of it, another stomp for Karrion Kross's troubles. Balor applies this abdominal stretch and they're trying to sell you on the fact that maybe Karrion Kross is going to tap out. Scarlett is screaming at him to make the ropes, which he finally does. A couple of Saito suplexes for Balor, and then he hits the... Is there a name for it? Like, I'm just calling it the Hidden Blade, but that's Ospreay's thing, isn't it? His forearm smash to the back of the head, basically. That's what he nailed Balor with twice. 1, 2, 3. Karrion Kross regains the NXT Championship. He's never lost. what did you think of the result and the match itself, Hamlet?
The match was longer than everything on night one, apart from the Gauntlet Eliminator. And I think that was probably its biggest problem. I didn't hate this. I didn't hate it. I don't think it completely exposed Karrion Kross, like on reflection, the Keith Lee match absolutely did. Though the fact that we're even talking in these terms doesn't bode well for Karrion Kross's title reign. Talking in like the everything bar a 2-minute squash is exposing Karrion Kross. That's not ideal, really, for who you're making your champion of this brand in particular. So I don't think it exposed. I still think it went too long. They were, when we talked about the Io Shirai Raquel Gonzalez match, and I was just so high on how committed they were in the booking of that match to Raquel. That was what was missing here. You could have shaved 10 minutes off this and got the same experience of Kross. He wasn't exactly monstering Finn Balor, but like a version of him monstering Finn Balor, and Balor just trying to do things like attack the liver or target the injury on a counter. Just to try and stay in this, you know? And then hitting the coup de grace and then getting a two and then thinking, oh, well, I'm buggered here. That was my biggest weapon. And I've gone for the weak spots and I still can't beat him. And then you have Kross finish him off. I think he could have told that story in 7 or 8 minutes. And I think it would have worked wonders for Kross's title reign and the restart of it as well. I just think they gave this too long for what should have been a fairly simple story. I really didn't hate it. Like, I don't just want to be a complete miserable bastard throughout all of this, because this was probably the best match of the night for me. And yet it still was a bit indulgent.
Yeah, I can't really add anything more to that. The problem with Karrion Kross is that when we were talking about his match with Damian Priest and it went like all of 12 minutes, we were thinking, I went a bit long this. Went a bit long this. And then when you talked about the Keith Lee match, he went, I went way too long. And this is like 16 minutes. So he spent too long selling. And the problem isn't just with his work, which is magnified on a brand that for years has just held work rate in such like profound reverence. Like, the character doesn't benefit from selling quite as much as he did. And I understand that they don't want to Kofi Kingston, Finn Balor. Like, I think we're the outliers on his title reign. I've loved the goddamn Pete Dunne match. It's an early front runner for my match of the year. At the minute, it's making the top 10. Like, I loved it. Didn't like it quite so much as other people, but other people have raved about this thing. So I can understand that, right, he's done a great job for the brand, Finn Balor. Let's not just dick him in 10 minutes. Like, make him look like he's going to win. And the idea is as well, like, you have to do a bit of drama. But I think they did the best possible story, dragged it a bit too long. And when it was time for Kross to do the Karrion Kross thing, I don't think he did it that well. Like, he's all smoke and mirrors for me, Karrion Kross.
Wasn't Kross covering against Daniel Bryan, was it?
No, it absolutely wasn't that at all. Like, the thing is, with Karrion Kross, the way that they're trying to portray him, in the way that he does have this intense aura about him, even if it's a little bit, like, lame, the idea is that he's meant to be this killer. And I know they can't call him killer by name anymore, but that's what he's meant to be. So when it comes time to do the not particularly difficult thing, the not particularly graceful thing, but the visceral, oh my God, you're in danger against this man thing, it just, I'd never feel it ever with Karrion Kross. The bit I'm referring to here, and it's so unlike Walter, and it's so unlike Brock Lesnar, these two like living myths of, like, monsters, like where you think, Jesus Christ, someone can get hurt here. When he's got Balor face down on the mat and he's driving the forearms to like the top of his back and it's meant to be near enough the neck, like a good worker would do, to make you think, oh Christ, he's going to break his neck with his freaking forearm. He didn't hit hard enough and he didn't hit in that sweet spot between the neck and the back where it looks like the neck, but it's actually the back. I just thought he looked weak. So you can't have this 6'4" shaven-headed like guy you would not want to walk into look like that in his work. It's doomy, his prospects as a champion on that brand for me. Like, it just, he can't get it. He's an and the bell rang guy, it's Kross. This match seemed to recognize that, but didn't do enough of it for me.
Why is his back Why is his backstage footage shot by the Vaude villains as well? I don't understand.
Well, that's that, Dad. Good one.
I forgot to mention, I'm annoyed with myself because I was going to do the introduction and include the, what were they called? Intangibles that they had when they flashed up the, like, you know, Karrion Kross's 13, 14 and 0 or whatever. And I was going to have, like, joined today by Michael Sidgwick. The intangible is he probably prefers AEW. And joined by Michael Hamlet, the intangible is he old. Like, I annoyed myself that I didn't get to do that there. But, yeah, I think one of them, I think it might have been Shotzi Blackheart, might as well have said, bonkers. Like, it was just like, no, we don't really know what to put with this.
It is so NXT to try and define intangibles as well.
Right, we've put it off for long enough. Let's talk about this unsanctioned main event. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, they went to war. I think I feel like I should just read your tweet, Sidge, and we can wrap up this entire podcast. Tell us what you said on Twitter this morning, at MCDrick, if you're not already following. Why wouldn't you already be following, by the way?
Why aren't you following me? Why not? I've got great tweets. Just a sumptuous blend of patter and insight. So I said, I love Adam Cole and I love Kyle O'Reilly, but I hate Bad Blood 2004. And that's what Triple H clearly mandated. The man is so far up his own arse that he is at one with his intestines. Independent of that tweet, Hamlet, what did you tweet?
My tweet, I haven't got my Twitter up. I swear, again, this was completely independent. It was that last minute, right? I'm just about to start work and I want to be angry about this match online. I want to be a miserable bastard on the internet about it.
Register your disgust throughout the world.
Yeah, mine was. It'll never happen, but somebody needs to tell Triple H and Shawn Michaels that their matches against each other were almost never good. I was saying, get that off in 2004. I shouldn't have to scream it at Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. This couldn't have been more like the build, a Triple H versus Shawn Michaels bore. For trying. And like, I liked bits of this match. I really did. Bits of this match were very, very good. A couple of them were actually really creative. But you have to judge it as a whole, not by the sum of its parts.
When I loaded it up this morning and saw the run length, I went, oh, you bastards.
I knew it. I was talking to Murray yesterday about this, like what we expected about the card. And I said, at a minimum, this is going 40 minutes. I knew it. I knew they were going to Triple H Shawn Michaels this. I absolutely knew it.
And I said to you, Sid, you know, there's some spots that I really enjoyed throughout this. And as you alluded to, Hamlet, have some creativity as well. And I'm not saying that they should have just done that spot to spot to spot because then it's just a spot fest. But you could have cut 15, 20 minutes off this and had a really thrilling, you know, bloody, just want to end you in this. And then in the midst of all of it, and I realise we've had a lot of melodrama recently, but the bit where Kyle O'Reilly wasn't sure if he really wanted to take... It's like, what's going on? You've been murdering each other for 20 minutes, and then all of a sudden, oh, I'm not too sure about this on the steps, lads. I didn't get it.
Kind of was a bit of a spot fest as well.
Yeah.
I was pretty critical of... and I watched it back once. I still didn't really like it. Of the first Moxley-Omega lights-out match. And yet I can acknowledge a couple of things in there that were very delicate almost. They were very character-driven. There was a couple of the way that they used a couple of weapons specifically that were very much John Moxley and Kenny Omega. The equivalent here was probably the stairs because they've built that up as the thing that takes people out. And somebody printing an Undisputed Era logo on a steel chair.
Oh my God, that was quite early. And I was going to mention that quite. So they get the chairs out from underneath. And I was like, oh, for a split second, I don't want to do this to myself, Sidge. I thought, oh, that's nice. They've just had a logo printed on the chair, but they're not going to reference it. And literally that thought went across my mind. And Vic Joseph went, not sure if you've noticed, but that's an Undisputed Era chair. And I was like, Sidge, what did you make of the new music for these guys, by the way?
I skipped the entrances. I'm not being funny. I have to anticipate my kids waking up. So what I did was I got up at 4:45. Me and Hamlet have got the same brain today.
Yep. 4:45 today.
I got 4:45 thinking, right, if they wake up at 6, that's not good. And it's a possibility. I'll skip the entrances. I watched Poppy skip the entrances in the video packages. So that's what I did. Were they both butt rock?
The thing with these themes were, I'm not going to, of all the things that I could be critical of on this show, it's not going to be them. You hear a theme for the first time when a beloved one has been replaced. And it's always hard to kind of judge it fairly. Like, the Undisputed Era theme was fantastic. The whole entrance, the whole presentation was great. Neither of them are out special, but they could both settle to being okay. Adam Cole's is the most interesting because ultimately you've got to see how they build a new entrance for him rather than just build a new theme.
When he went boom, and I was like, well, there's no boom. Why are you booming?
It was like, there wasn't any boom
in the theme. This probably wasn't the night to judge those. It's probably best to see how you feel about them in 6 months if either of them have managed to get over as singles guys.
So, as you mentioned, they got chairs involved. Cole hit a neck breaker on O'Reilly on a chair. O'Reilly's back by the end of this was murdered. Cole later on was regrouping on a chair, so Kyle O'Reilly just diving drop kicked him and then hoied a chair into his face. They got a chain that got brought into the ring. Cole tied it around the top rope and they're battling with it. O'Reilly gets it and wraps it around his leg and kicks Cole, and then Cole counters with a chain-assisted figure four, which O'Reilly then versus the pressure on. They both knock each other down. I really liked the bit where Kyle O'Reilly's running at Adam Cole and he just washing lines him with the metal chain. That looked rough as. And then Cole hit a chain-assisted backstabber for a two count. This is the bit where they did the step spot. Cole trying to suplex O'Reilly onto that. O'Reilly counters with a guillotine, knee strike. And then O'Reilly looks like he's going to suplex Cole onto the steps, but then he's conflicted in the turmoil. Jesus Christ, I've had enough of that this week.
If he's doing that, sorry, just interrupt your flow, Wilborn, I'm really sorry. If he's going, I can't do it on the steps, that almost really badly injured me, and I'm still a little bit linked to him, I'll sit him on the table instead.
Yeah, brainbuster on the table instead.
So I'm thinking, right, okay. So he's taking... I'll hit him a bit. Not like loads. I'll hit him a little bit. What does that say about a table spot? Carry on. You can do melodrama. You can do it. I will allow it. Just, there's a good and bad version of everything. Sorry, Wilbur.
It's because the Undisputed Era were heels. Like, he can look inside himself and do bad things because he's done bad things for the past 4 years. This is not DIY splitting up and Tommaso Ciampa being this guy that we didn't know he was when they were in DIY and babyfaces. The Undisputed Era were bad guys. Their whole friendship has been based on doing bad things in the context of this story. And now all of a sudden, Kyle O'Reilly uses a weapon aggressively and it's like, he's gone to that dark place. Like, he's been in the dark place for the entire duration of his NXT career, save for the past 2 months.
There's the brainbuster on the table. Cole escapes into the broadcast area and then clonks O'Reilly on the head with a monitor, goes under the ring, gets out the toolbox. It really was a clonk, wasn't it? Gets in the toolbox, tries to stab O'Reilly in the eye with some... that gets sort of fought away from him. Then there's a tire iron, but O'Reilly takes him out with a... I was going to say wacky line. Rebound lariat, I think, is the way they described it. So then O'Reilly gets the chain, gets him in an armbar, gets him... They struggle around. It gets him in a triangle choke. And Cole just grabs the tire iron he was going to use earlier and nails O'Reilly in the ribs for it. O'Reilly's fighting back when Cole hits him with a low blow and a super kick for a two count. Cole wraps a chair around O'Reilly's head. The referee's telling him to stop. So Adam Cole just twats this referee, who I think dies on the spot. and then immediately hits a Panama Sunrise and he's confused as to where the referee is. It's like, you've literally just laid him out, Adam. What are you doing, mate? George Atkins throughout all this, throughout the entire bloody match of I'm better than you, blah, 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 blah. They go to the outside. Cole keeps hoying O'Reilly into the divider between the audience, the fencing and what have you. O'Reilly puts him in a jumping guillotine on the ramp. And so Cole drives O'Reilly through the stage, gets up, climbs out of the hole, and then kicks the side of the walkway in to drag O'Reilly out of the side of it. That was inventive, I suppose. Brainbuster on the steel steps by Cole on Kyle O'Reilly. Puts him back in the ring. And one, two, and O'Reilly gets his shoulder maybe an inch off the mat to break up the pinfall. Cole goes to the last shot, but O'Reilly collapses to the mat before he could hit it. Shades of Kenny Omega, Michael Sidgwick. And then he goes again, but this time O'Reilly counters with a double knee bar. Cole nails him with the chain. and goes for the Panama Sunrise, but O'Reilly counters it with a Death Valley driver and a soccer kick. Last shot from Kyle O'Reilly on Adam Cole for a great near fall.
Jesus Christ, take it home, Wilborn.
I know, we're nearly there, mate. I was making my notes of this going, well, I have to include that. And then I looked back and I was like, scroll. Jesus Christ, we're still on the main event. Okay. Cole pops Kyle O'Reilly in the corner, bollocks him, always better than him, et cetera, et cetera. And then O'Reilly hits him with a low blow, wraps a chain around his knee. I love this. Well, I'm not sure if I should, brainbuster him on the steps or not. I'll tell you what I'll do instead is I'll wrap a chain around my knee and then I'll jump off the top rope and sandwich Adam Cole's head between my knee with a chain wrapped around it and a chair on the mat. That's what happened. Diving knee drop on Adam Cole on a chair. 1, 2, 3. Kyle O'Reilly wins the war, Michael Sidgwick. And Adam Cole gets stretchered off at the end of the match.
Oh, God. Where to begin? There are dumb people in this world who are smart enough to recognize good things and try and do a version of it. Triple H is one of those people. This was so oppressively a Triple H Shawn Michaels thing that I didn't like the storyline going into the match, but at the very least, you should build off the storyline you've told and mirror it in the ring. These guys were so goddamn intent on killing each other that Daddy had to separate them and they had to have this unsanctioned match where one of them could feasibly die rather than sanction it and have blood on their hands. That they were driving each other literally round the bend in cars, trying to get at each other, like invading their spaces like the gyms. Why then have a middling paced 40 minute, like methodical adjacent, pathetic reach for epic slog? Like it's pathetic, total cliche of a match. And you know, it should always be implied on these goddamn podcasts that we appreciate what wrestlers do to their bodies for our entertainment, even if we're not entertained by it. That should go without saying, but I'm going to say it because, God damn it, they went 40 minutes and they half killed each other. But I just thought it lacked any kind of soul or emotion or personality. It was a trope checklist. It was actively stupid at times with the Adam Cole thing, hitting the ref. I'm going to say one nice thing. Like, some of the spots are really good, but there were spots. I did like the use of the chain in particular because if you want to be pretentious about it, maybe in their heads they were thinking they were still linked together in some way. And that was why they used a goddamn chain. I'm going to be incredibly generous with this take, right? Because I really like Adam Cole and I really like Adam and Kyle O'Reilly. I would like to think that when they did the spot through the stage, Adam Cole, sensing Kyle O'Reilly's ability to just snatch people out of midair into like this grotesque submission hold, didn't want to put his arm into this chasm that he'd opened up because it could get ripped off with a snap submission hold. I'd like to think that he slapped his thigh, super kicking some plywood because he knew it was a safer bet than exposing all of his body and not just his arm into that pit. Maybe that's why they did that. Or maybe it was just what would look cool, K-E-W-L. Sick of this. I was sick of this in 2019. I was sick of this main event in 2019, and they still do it, and it's getting longer and it's getting more cliched, if that was even possible.
I don't have much to add to that, really, because unlike WWE, we know when to just cut things off. I like the finish. There you go. I thought, like, in terms of something that really pisses me off about these matches, independent of this one specifically, is when I don't believe that the thing that has actually ended it is as hard looking or as dangerous looking as something earlier on. And I thought the finish was pretty cool in that regard. Like, the chain assisted knee on the way that the chairs were stacked was a believable way to end it after you've done several shoulder up 2.999s that kind of feel like, oh, that should have really been it, shouldn't it? You're not going to be able to like top that. I thought they nailed that and stuck the landing. The thing is, right, today, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly don't need one fat old white dude wrestling fan to be like, I'm really disappointed for you guys, because there's going to be loads of people online that love this. I sense this is going to be one of them things that appeals to a certain demographic.
Programmed to enjoy things that go long and have weapons in it.
Yeah, like I this wasn't loyal to any sort of obvious story, beyond the literal obvious story that they were deciding to tell you at various points. Really heartless. I feel quite sorry for them, because they killed themselves here. They really evidently hurt themselves. 40 minutes is an unbelievable physical pursuit, an incredible achievement of the human body to put yourself through that. To use a Limmy voice, like, at what cost? At what cost? Like, what do I feel more for them as a result of this? Do I think that Kyle O'Reilly has got the redemption he needs to go on? And like, all right, Kyle O'Reilly has won this match, but would you fancy him to beat Karrion Kross for the title? Nah, of course not. That's a different hurdle altogether. He's not that babyface. I don't want to watch either of these two again. I feel quite crushed off of this. I'm not, like, one final beat made me quite angry. I'm too tired of these matches to feel angry about them anymore. I'm just disappointed.
Felt nothing.
Which is the worst thing any parent can say, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's a good job you're not their daddy, Triple H's. So you're probably very proud.
Let us know your thoughts on night two of NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver on Twitter, WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We've got loads of WrestleMania content, of course, going up over the next few days. Join us for our WrestleMania live streams on YouTube on Saturday and Sunday night. And of course, next week, we'll be here for the preview of NXT moving to Tuesdays, the preview of AEW Dynamite unopposed on a Wednesday. And just a slightly more relaxed week next week, let's hope, anyway. But for now, this has been the review of NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver Night 2. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.